Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast is titled Culture in America, The Three Biggest Challenges Facing Western Civilization, Part 2. Recorded in 2007. Dennis McQuestion, former clinical professor of corporate governance and executive director of the Institute for Excellence in Corporate Governance at the University of Texas at Dallas, and former CIA official, author, and recipient of the U.S. National Intelligence Distinguished Service Medal, Herb Meyer, continue their discussion about the three biggest challenges facing Western civilization. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
You know, this is part two of a two-part series on the challenges to Western civilization, and specifically, we're going to talk about ways to overcome those challenges. Our guest is Herb Meyer, who outlined those three challenges as radical Islam, the liberal challenge from within, and demographics. He's back to tell us what we ought to do about them, so let's see what he has to say. And for those of you who didn't see the first program, let me say that Herb served in the Reagan administration as a special assistant to the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, vice chairman of the CIA's National Intelligence Council. And he, Herb, you were getting all kinds of intelligence passing over your desk all the time and trying to make some sense of it, I suppose. You were also the widely credited with being the first senior government official to forecast the collapse of the Soviet Union. You were later awarded a U.S. National Intelligence Distinguished Service Medal for that. You were an associate editor at Fortune magazine, written several books, a DVD, which is called The Siege of Western Civilization. And we're glad to have you here in Dallas out of Seattle.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Those three things that we talked about, tell us just briefly what you said about them, and then let's start going back the other way with this idea of this internal threat that you're talking about.
What we were saying in the last segment is that there are three concurrent threats to our civilization. One is the war itself. That's an external threat. We have the demographic threat, which we're causing ourselves. Our birth rates have dropped below the replacement level, which means our populations are in danger of shrinking or aging. And of course, you need massive immigration to overcome that, and that's another issue. And finally, we're in the middle of what people are calling a second civil war, what we call the culture wars in the United States. So we have one external threat and two kind of internal threats.
Okay. Now, let's take those in reverse order as we look at what needs to be done. And as we talk about this internal threat that has to do with civil war that you're talking, there's a term that is thrown about often. It's on college campuses everywhere. It's in the media all the time. It's called multiculturalism. Tell us what that is and what it means, and then differentiate that from what most of us think of when we think of multiculturalism.
Well, it's interesting. One thing I learned a long time ago, when people use a big fancy word, ask them to define it. There's a reason nobody defines multiculturalism. I got the definition. The technical definition is people of different faiths and cultures are permitted to settle without being required to integrate. That's the technical definition. It's got nothing to do with being sensitive to other people's cultures and all that stuff.
Or diversity.
Or diversity's got nothing to do with that. It simply means people are permitted to settle without being required to integrate. Now, traditionally in the United States, we've done a very good job of integrating our immigrants. That's how my family got here a couple of generations ago. I'll bet that's how most of your families got here. The approach was bring your food, bring your music, leave everything else in the old country, just be an American. The Europeans take a multicultural approach. Who are we to say that our way of doing things is any better than anyone else's? So to a great extent, the immigrants coming into Western Europe, they're mostly Muslim, are settling, but not integrating. And that's part of the problem Europe's facing. Now, what's happening in the United States is we're going down the European track. We're beginning to say it's okay to settle here, but you don't have to become an American. And that I find very worrisome.
Well, this is Cal Thomas, who's probably somebody you know or follow anyway, and he wrote an editorial last week. And it's talking about rising immigration poses a threat to England's future. And he says that large concentrations of Muslims in England are putting together what they call no-go zones. And that is that if you trespass in those neighborhoods, you risk being attacked. And this is being done and said by a guy who is a former Muslim who's converted to the Church of England's Bishop of Rochester. His name is Michael Nazir Ali. I don't know him. But in any event, what he's talking about there is this whole idea of segregation and subjugation of non-Muslims as the norm, he says, for this extremist form of Muslims. And in London, 1.3 million of the 7.5 million people living in London are Muslim. Does that have anything to do with the possibility that there could be differences there in how Western civilization is run?
Well, you have to be very careful here. There's a difference between immigration and settling in a country. Now, we have a very good history of bringing immigrants in, and in a couple of generations, the kids and grandkids, they're Americans. The Europeans don't have that kind of track record. So in Europe, the Muslims, to a great extent, are settling but not integrating. They've got what they call the no-go zones, where police won't go. With all the car burnings in France that brought Sarkozy to power, that's what that's about. To give you a sense of how separate they are culturally in Europe, today the fastest rise in crime in Western Europe is a father killing his daughter. Now, by the way, that's now happening in Canada, and as of a couple of weeks or months ago, it's happening in Texas. There's a problem there. Now, when you come into the United States, we're not bringing in Muslims so much as Hispanics come in for obvious geographic reasons. By the way, most of them are perfectly wonderful. They're like everybody else's grandparents who came here two generations ago. They just want to get here, deal themselves into the game, and get the kids in school, and it's great. But increasingly, in our schools, we are preventing them from becoming Americans. We're sort of telling them to celebrate their diversity, their separateness, their differences. And I think that's a very bad thing.
Mm-hmm. What should be done about that, in your estimation?
We have to make up our minds. Either our culture is worth defending, or it isn't. And we seem to have lost that.
Well, that's a bad thing.
I know.
I would say that there have been several Muslims who have said to me, in all seriousness, is that when you have a culture built around Paris Hilton, Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan, and other sluts like that, you don't have much of a culture to defend, in my estimation.
And they're right. One of the problems with Western civilization is it's celebrity-driven and sometimes money-driven and all that. It's very ugly. And we're our own worst enemy in the sense that that is the face we show the rest of the world. And that's our fault, and we ought to get a grip on that. You know, all of us who are parents sort of understand that.
But it's a very bad thing. It's not something you ask government to do, to censor stuff and all this. I mean, there's just a lot of things in this culture that most of us, I would say, most of the people watching this program are watching this program because they've taped Jerry Springer, and they'll watch him next. I don't know. I don't think that's the case. But you know, we've got that dumbing down, especially in the media. And as you said to me before the program, you said, I don't want to be on a program that just talks about sound bites. Can we talk about real thoughts here?
Look, it is a problem. We live in a society that is very complicated. Not just complicated technologically. It's complicated economically, socially, politically. It's modern society. We'd better understand it. Modern society, the United States, is like a 747. It's a marvelous piece of equipment, but you better know how to fly it. A lot of people are going to get hurt if you crash that thing. We'd better educate our children to understand. And one of the problems we've got, and this is part of the culture, we argue before we understand. And that's not a good thing. Sets a terrible example for our children.
Well, you look at the talk shows, if I may say, other than this one, obviously, but you look at the talk shows where everybody yells at each other all the time, on the phone, on the satellite, everything. I mean, I don't think any of them has a clue what they're talking about, number one. And secondly, they sure don't care what anybody else is talking about because they're just trying to get their sound bite in there. Am I missing something there or not?
And I get on these talk shows from time to time. The one thing you will never hear from a talking head is, hey, you're right, I hadn't thought about that. I've changed my mind. Nobody backs off. Everyone's on transmit. No one's on receive. It's not a good thing for our society.
All right, let's talk about demographics. The numbers that you talked about last time, if we could put that graphic up there again, let's look at the demographics for a lot of Europe and the U.S., and here it is here. So,
Europe is 1.5, so they're about 30% below the 2.1 replacement level. The United States, for about 30 years, has been at 2. Just fractionally below the replacement level. This year, 2008, for the first time in 30 years, we're going to hit the 2.1 level. So that's change.
And that's a good change.
It's a good change. Now, we don't know why. Now, it could be simply the birth rate's up. When you break down the numbers ethnically, the Anglo birth rate in the U.S. is 1.8, same as France. The Hispanic birth rate in the U.S. is 2.75. That's why we have a 2.1 birth rate. Now, it may be that that's where the push is coming, or it may be that it's among the Anglos going up. We don't know that yet. Last year in the United States, 23% of all births in this country were to women who themselves had not been born in the United States. That's very high. Now, there's nothing wrong with this. It's okay. But we just need to understand what the numbers are.
And, in fact, one of the things that argues for immigration, it seems like nobody's for immigration anymore, but one of the things that argues for immigration is that unlike Japan, let's say, who is not going to let people into that culture, and that society is going to continue to age and age rather, that the immigration can and has had positive impact on the United States. Yes or no?
Yes. We should be in favor of immigration. That's how we got here, unless you happen to be an Indian. Immigration is a wonderful thing, and we have a real talent in this country for taking immigrants, turning them into Americans, and they contribute enormously to our society, and they change it, and that's okay. That's a healthy thing.
But then tying those two challenges together, let's see if I understand what you're saying here. If, in fact, we can get the demographic situation at least to the 2.1 replacement level and continue to do the job that we've historically done in assimilating people who come here versus creating these no-go zones and more of a melting pot versus, let's say, a tossed salad, which is what's been happening, and worse than a tossed salad is where you've got people over here not even on the same plate. Would that be fair to say?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the challenge.
Yeah, but we you know, as this whole immigration debate explodes, we need to be very clear about this. Traditionally, we like immigrants. That's how most of us got here. Let's not be anti-immigrant. But what we want is for people to become Americans. So, and by the way, when you get into the question of guest workers, what's a guest worker? Not an American. So that's a European concept that we're bringing here, and it isn't serving Europe very well.
Okay, so having said that then what we should be doing from an education level is try to teach people, is English first a good idea then?
I think it is.
Okay, because what you want is people speaking English.
Right.
Yeah.
By the way, it annoys me that we may have to make that a law because it should happen naturally. But if it isn't, then you really have to push it because if you don't think your culture is worth defending, you're going to lose it. Now, we could be here all night talking about everything that's wrong with our culture. But that's us. We can talk about that. But it's a pretty good place to be. I've got a piece of the Berlin Wall. And whenever I get to talk to students, which isn't often enough, I bring this piece of the Berlin Wall to the class and I let the students handle it. And I always point out to them that in the Cold War, of all the people who got over the Berlin Wall, there is no record of any idiot going from the West into the East. It's all coming that way. Does that tell us anything? Mm-hmm. When's the last time an American baseball player hijacked a plane and flew it to Havana? Doesn't happen. They come this way. Look, if you don't think your culture is worth defending, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, I think as long as people want to come here, and I think a lot of people do, obviously still do, but there are some of us, frankly, concerned enough about the future of this country, financially, looking at the unfunded liabilities, if I may say so, of $50 to $85 trillion, looking at the continued growth of government, looking at the deterioration of the culture, and these things that, you know, I had a conversation with my kids over Christmas about by the time next year came along, I expected them to have at least three countries identified that they could leave this country and go to if things continued on the same trend that I see. What do you think about that?
That's a terrible idea. Everybody else is trying to come here. Where are you sending your kids?
Well, that's the problem, I think, is that where would you go from here?
Listen, there's no place to go. We've got to get this straight.
Well, I'm with you. Look, that's my number one goal.
May I make a suggestion here? I mean, to you, but generally, as we talk about this, We've got to get the politics out of this. Okay? Honorable people will disagree about what to do. That's okay. That's healthy. But whether we're liberals, conservatives, Republicans, Democrats, there ought to be some basic points we can agree on, that the culture is worth defending, not perfect, but worth defending, that immigration is a good thing, but if you're going to come here, be an American, and on and on. And we've become so obsessed with what we disagree about, we've lost track of what we agree about. It's very hard to have a conversation then.
Well, if I can make personal observation, my generation, I'm immigrant, obviously. We came in 1950s, running away from gangsters like Stalin and Tito. We came here, and the first intuitive reaction, desire was to learn to become Americans. I observe people from my part of the world who are coming now, from the Balkans. They want America to adjust to them. We came to adjust to America. It's a big difference. And that's what you're talking about.
I think you've said it precisely, yeah.
Exactly. Okay, let's go to that last point, which is the issue of radical Islam. You've made the case, and make it again for that person who didn't see part one, about who you think these people are and the percentage and et cetera, but also what should we be doing from your perspective to change that to not the biggest challenge that we have to Western civilization?
Well, to define the problem, there is within Islam a civil war. For shorthand, you could say the radicals versus the moderates. The moderates are the overwhelming majority, but the radicals have the guns. That's always the way it is in these things. The threat we face is from the radicals. So in a sense, what we want is for the good guys to win that civil war, for Islam to reconcile with the modern world, join us in the 21st century. That's what we're trying to do. And the objective of what we call the war is to give the moderates a helping hand. We cannot reconcile Islam with the modern world. We cannot settle their civil war. They're going to have to do that. But we can help. Now, honorable people will disagree over whether we're going about this the right way. And fair enough, I don't know anyone who thinks we're doing it perfectly. Certainly not me, and I doubt anybody in your audience tonight.
Yeah, but one of the problems, though, and I agree with you about how we're going about it, one of the problems, it seems to me, Herb, is that I'm not sure we're even articulating what we're trying to do.
No, we're not.
Much less doing it perfectly.
Well, look, one of the rules of life is no plan survives its collision with reality. Mine don't, yours don't, nobody's don't. And when your plan goes awry and you have to get it back on course, you'd better remember what you were trying to do in the first place. Otherwise, you have no way of measuring whether you're coming closer or moving further away. And one of the problems with the war at the moment is that our national conversation has taken a very partisan turn. You're either for the president or against the president. That's not a helpful conversation. And if we've lost track of what the war is about, then you can't even discuss whether we're winning it or losing it or whether we're achieving our objective or not. So we've got to go back to basics and understand what the problem is, and then if honorable people disagree about how to solve it, well, fine. That's a healthy thing.
There's so much cynicism, of which I'm one, about whether or not the American people were even told the truth about why the war in Iraq started. I mean, there's a jillion reasons they seem to change with the season as to why it was done. I mean, it just seems to me, and of course, you're as a former government bureaucrat, if I may classify you there.
I wish you wouldn't, but go ahead.
Okay, I understand, but you can't deny it. You got a government paycheck for a few years at least. The fact is that I think there's an arrogance and an elitism that says we can't let the American people know the truth. They're not smart enough to handle it.
Well, I take a different approach. Whatever our politics, can we all agree that this is perhaps not the most articulate administration that's ever been elected?
I think that'd be safe to say.
Okay. That's a real problem. And by the way, this is a management issue, not a political issue. No one's good at everything, okay? Nobody is. When President Reagan was elected, he's obviously a great communicator, but he could not communicate to intellectuals. Had nothing to do with brains, it's just intellectuals talk differently and need to go at it differently. But it's important to communicate to intellectuals. So he hired Gene Kirkpatrick, who could. You bring in the talent. That's what you do as a leader of an organization. You see what the missing pieces are, and you fill them. President Reagan could not remember all 15 members of the Soviet Union's Politburo. So he hired a little dork like me who could remember that stuff. You bring in the people who can do what you can. This administration is unwilling to do that.
Hey, thank you. Here's a comment.
And that's a problem.
Before I ask my question, you keep talking about the war as being a big challenge, but which war are you talking about? The GWRT, the Global War on Terrorism, the Iraqi War, the Afghanistan War?
Well,
now, wait a minute. Before you answer that, though, I want to know, how much do you think the defeat of the Russian Army and Air Force in Afghanistan in 88 by the Mujahideen led to the downfall of the unraveling of the Soviet Union?
The defeat of the Russian troops in Afghanistan played a very key role in the ultimate ending of the Cold War. That was a major defeat for them, and that was a big deal. As far as the Iraq War and Afghanistan and all that, it's all part of the larger conflict. The president calls it the War on Terror. There probably could be a better phrase for it, but that's what we call it. So it's all part of the same thing. Now, again, whether we should have gone into Iraq, when we did, how we did, honorable people can disagree. In World War II, we were attacked by Japan. A week later, we were at war with Germany and Italy. They never attacked us. But once the war started, you had to deal with the whole mess. In a sense, that's what's happening again. Now, again, whether we should have gone into Iraq when we did and how we did, people argue about that for the next 5,000 years.
Well, and one of the problems that we have today, Herb, that we didn't have then, as an example, is that in those days, there were state actors. Today, with terrorism, the brand of terrorism that we are fighting, these are folks who are transnational terrorists. They don't necessarily have a country as such. And so, you fight a war against Al-Qaeda, well, they say, we need to go into Iraq, we need to go into Afghanistan, we need to go into Pakistan, wherever. It's a little bit different problem, a harder problem in many ways, isn't it, or not?
Very hard. Here's the crux of it. The lesson of 9/11 is that we live in a world in which a small number of people can kill a large number of people very quickly. They can hijack airplanes and fly them into buildings. If they pour botulism into the Dallas water supply, you'll kill 200,000 people overnight. They get their hands on a nuclear device, they can take out Houston, San Diego, Vancouver, Paris. That's the problem. And when you live in that kind of an environment where a small number of people can kill a large number of people very quickly, you cannot wait for it to happen. And the technical word for that is preemption. That's what it means. You preempt, you cannot wait for it to happen. If we lose Houston, getting the creeps who did it isn't satisfactory. You want to stop it from happening. It's not like knocking over a 7-Eleven.
No, that's true. But
so
of course,
that's the nature of the problem, and that's why you have to move to do something.
That
now, again, people can disagree over how, but that's the problem.
That would be a tragic thing, but in Dallas, you know, if someplace has to go, I mean, Houston, we'd put them up there, you know.
I'll stay out of that one.
Not the people, but the city, if you know what I mean. Yes, sir.
Well, I was going to ask, what, in your opinion, is a good way for us to recapture that determination and that unity that this nation had immediately after 9/11, when you'd see members of Congress from both parties unite, and you'd see the president determined to, you know, to go out and get bin Laden? I think we've seemed to have lost that determination. I'd like to see if we could get it back.
Yeah, it's become very partisan very quickly, and that's a shame. You know, you can take the extreme view, which is, well, it'll take another 9/11, and then everyone will come together again. But that's a horrible price to pay for that. It's up to us. You know, this is our war. We're going to have to survive it. If you go back to World War II, if you think there was political unity, you haven't read your history. People disagreed, but they agreed about one thing, which is, we're going to win this thing. Everything else they disagreed about, but they agreed about that. That's what we've lost. And my suspicion is there's no overnight solution to this. We'd better start teaching our children. And what we have to teach them is who we are, what Western civilization is, and why it's worth defending. If we can do that, we'll be a long way toward draining some of this bitter partisanship out and finding our way forward.
Okay, in just a couple of minutes that we have left, Herb, you've given us some good suggestions here. Any more concrete things about what that viewer specifically can do? Educate him or herself, obviously. You know, be involved. I don't know if you need to be involved politically, or what do you need to do?
If I had to make one suggestion, it would be this. Think before you vote. You know, when people choose what model cell phone they want, or what DVD to rent at the video place Friday night, they spend a lot of time looking and comparing and thinking. And yet when we choose someone to put in office, you say, oh, he's got a nice family and I like his dog. We're really electing the people who are the crew of the 747 that we're on. Now, honorable people will disagree, and that's fine. But if everyone could agree that we're going to take this very seriously and demand that the candidates who will be presenting themselves this year tell us what they plan to do and how they plan to go about it and how they see it, we'll be a long way forward. By the way, if we disagree over what to do, that's fine. But we have a right to insist that they explain it to us.
I'm trying to think if I remember any political candidate on either party talking about either of these three challenges that you're talking about.
Well, that tells you something, doesn't it?
Tells me a lot, yeah.
Okay. Well, there you have it.
I had some degree of cynicism about the candidates to begin with, so now it's even bigger than it was before, I suppose. Anyway, we appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me.
Keep up the good work and what you do. We appreciate your joining us as well, because, you know, whether or not you believe what Herb Meyer has to say, then we all have our work cut out for us if Western civilization is to continue as we know it. If you missed part one, you can view it on our website at www.frtv.org. We hope you continue to watch this program, and we thank you very much for inviting us in to talk about things that matter with people who care.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.